Hello and welcome to The Things They Talked About, starring Asia Rodriguez,
Julian Enriquez,
Rocky Howard,
Michael Arvalo,
episode 3. And today we're going to talk about chapters Church through Speaking of Courage. All right, I have chapter Church. And my question is, when they find the church in the abandoned area, do you think Kiowa wants to be in church because of the war and he wants to be forgiven for the people he's killed? Or it's just something that he's always wanted to do? Because he did talk about always wanting to be a minister when he was younger. But do you think the war maybe helped him influence to be?
Of course. I feel like, yeah, of course. So if he, because he said he thought about that when he was a kid and wanted to do that when he was older. And I, just the war just added to it probably and made him feel like that he needs that in his life.
Yeah, I think the war put more pressure on him to, you know, be a priest and, or not a priest, minister. And, you know, go into that, grow in that religion and have that God with you on your side and stuff. And Michael?
Yeah, because Kyo is like also religious, right? Like he carries the Bible with him too, so maybe that's like why he wanted to be in the church in the first place.
Second question. The image of the monk cleaning the M60 is encouraging and jarring. What is the purpose? What purpose does it serve in the story?
I kind of feel like it's because a monk doing that is kind of against the norm, that doesn't feel right. So I feel like it really just emphasizes the fact that, like, in war, really anything that is, like, it's you're staying alive and that's what it is, period. And so I feel like the monk is just really, really showing that.
Yeah, it's like a sort of an irony, like how the monk, you know, chose a life of, you know, no violence, but instead he's here cleaning a gun to kill other people for protection and stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah, the cleaning of the gun, it's like very weird for a monk to do. Because they are like supposed to be peaceful and stuff. And
yeah, like how does he know to do that? Like, what do you know?
Yeah.
I like it. All right, next chapter. All right,
I had both of the chapters, The Man I Killed and Ambush.
Oh, these were good chapters.
So,
I like these ones.
My first question. So in the chapter, The Man I Killed, O'Brien goes into a very deep talk about the soldier he killed, like with many brutal face injuries and like a bad description of all that. And so then, continuing into Ambush, his daughter asks him if he's ever killed anyone. So he responds then with the entire story of like how he killed this soldier. Mm-hmm. And so he talks about rubber shoes and a shaped hole, showing that like it is the same character. Why does he tell the same story twice and like reiterate and like go really in depth about this whole situation?
I think it's because to like make an emphasis on, you know, the action he did and what happened and that whole. The whole thing, that's why he goes into the great detail, right, of how he killed that man, or, yeah, and his facial features and everything.
When he explains it, like, I think it's just his guilt taking over, and it just continues. It's like repeating himself and stuff.
So you kind of be kind of respectful for that man, because he did kill him, so he just want to be like, he had to do what he had to do, but he wants to be a little respectful about it.
So he says star-shaped, the same question. He says star-shaped hole a lot. What does a star-shaped hole look like to you?
I think it looks like a star.
Like, what do you think about that? How are you going to make a star imprint on, like, somebody's head? Like, doesn't that seem weird?
Oh, okay.
A star-shaped hole?
A cookie cutter.
Yeah, but it was a grenade that killed him. Like, how does it make a star-shaped hole?
I don't think it's symbolic. I think it was the way he took that killing or that murder in front of him, where, like, a grenade would blow up. And after he saw his friend die, or after he saw this man dead, all he saw was like a star-shaped hole. And for him, a star meant something else deeper. And I think that star meant, like, you know, how... I think the star meant for him, since he saw it for himself, that it meant, like, these 5 points of how he wanted to... Mike, want to help me out here?
He saw a star shaped. I don't think it really symbolized anything. It's just like an explosion.
You have to get deeper.
So, yeah.
I think maybe a star, because when you think of a star, you think of like something beautiful. But I'm really, I don't know what a star is shaped. That's a really good question because I have no idea.
Okay, we'll do that one then. So after throwing the grenade in ambush, he almost starts like hoping that the soldier moves and like gets away in time. And the soldier doesn't, obviously. But I feel like from personal experience, when you go through something like traumatic or like crazy, almost like when you think back about it, you don't remember it well. So at one point he starts talking about like, he'll be like, I didn't hear the grenade go off. But it was a dim grenade sound, but it was really loud. And he like starts contradicting himself about like what he remembers happening. Do you think it's a case of like he didn't fully remember and it was too like hectic in his mind?
Yeah, because there's like situations where you go through where it's too intense for you to even comprehend what's going on. So you put in your own ideas to make it have sense. So I think that's what he was doing, but he kept adding it. So it can make sense to him so that he wasn't, going crazy.
Yeah, well, I think AJ is on the right track there. We're just, the sense of him going crazy and having that sense of, what's another for crazy? That insanity within him and seeing that, he's trying to make up for the fact that someone just died in front of him. He's trying to put facts in front, or like other facts in front of him to try to, deal with that pain at that time and... Yeah.
Yeah. Having somebody die in front of you is probably gruesome and disgusting. So just had a lot going through his head. I don't think he really knew how to react to it or respond to it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I just realized.
Okay. All right. So the next chapter is style.
Ooh.
And
I like style. That one was a really good chapter.
It was really.
Yeah.
Before you answer your question, Michael, AJ, what's your favorite part in style?
Well, I think we should listen to Michael's questions, and then I can emphasize on what I like the most about it.
Okay.
Oh. All right. So the first question. After the village is burned down, there's like a girl who's about 14 years old, as described in the book, and she starts to dance. Why? Do you think she starts dancing because she's discouraged of what happened, like after all her family did just die and get burned to death? Do you think she dances because she's discouraged or because she doesn't know what to do?
I think she's so trying to find like something to make her feel better.
I think it was just something taking over
her body, and she has nothing. She doesn't know what to do. Like, this doesn't happen on the reg. Like, her family's gone now, so she probably just starts dancing to clear her mind.
Do you think her dancing symbolizes something?
I feel like it could, but...
Yeah, no, I think it does, because dancing in many cultures means, like, different things, how, you express your feelings. That's what it meant, like, in history. People dance to express their feelings. That's what some animals do sometimes, is to dance to express their feelings and for other mates and stuff. So I think with this girl, when she was dancing, she's expressing her feelings of how she lost all her family in the village with the fire. And that fire just also is a symbolism of how, it's always something. There's always something burning, always something bad happening, and something bad that's going to happen.
That's a really good point. But I also want to say, like, of all the books I've read, this scene and the scene from Sweetheart are like two of the weirdest scenes like
I've
ever read on
the planet. That's why I like this chapter so much, because I've never really had a book that pulls me in and then confuses me like that.
But like super duper odd, and I feel like it even just adds more so to like it's war and like anything can happen and like you never know what's gonna happen. I feel like just really bizarre chapter. I think it's definitely symbolic of like exactly what Jordan said. I think that's a really good point.
Question two. So when Azar sees the girls dancing, he starts to mosh the girls. And Henry Dobbins also starts dancing, but he actually follows and like respects her. Mm-hmm. So while Azar is mocking her, Henry basically threatens him and says, "Do you want to get thrown over a well?" Why do you think he tells Azar that? And do you think it's because he feels like feels sympathetic of what just happened to her?
He's doing his best to like almost sympathize with the girl and like show her that like she's not alone, and I feel like it really like helped her in the chapter. And Azar being about it.
Whoa.
Really, and like I feel like it just it opened up the like what we think of as a soldier and what we think of in war, because up until now it's mostly been a lot of just like dark stuff, like even Azar with the chocolate bar, like after how he's like, oh, like feel bad for whoever couldn't kill that kid, and like it always seemed to be like the bad side, but this like is the first time I feel in the book where we see like something like happy.
I feel like I agree with everything Brophy said. As like he summed it up perfectly, like he's trying to honor what happened to that little girl's family and trying to honor what, you know, what she's trying to do and what she's trying to have respect, you know, have just respect for. And yeah, I think it's like having like a devil and an angel, and having the guy, you know, disrespect to the dance and how he's just trying to mock her. I feel like it's a symbol for like the evil that happens in the war, and the other guy that's trying to, you know, actually follow her and respect what she's trying to do and just be with her at that time is, you know, a symbol of like an angel, like, you know, or like good, the goodness of like what can happen in the war.
Thank you, Jimmy. So last chapter, right?
Yes.
Oh yeah, that was me.
Excuse me.
I had speaking of courage, and in the chapter, Norman Booger goes back to his hometown in Iowa. He goes to drive around in his father's old car, and then he comes to a realization that he has nowhere to go. So do you think him having nowhere to go is a deeper meaning for something? Or is it just a brutally remote, you know, honest thing of literally saying he has nowhere to go?
No, he literally has nowhere to go.
It's both. He literally has nowhere to go, and symbolically, people coming to him from war don't know what to do. They don't have anywhere to go. They don't feel at home. So it's both. Okay. 100%.
Yeah. I completely agree with Brophy. it really is both, because, I mean, what can you do when you get back, when you go back home from war? I mean,
you can't do much.
They're like traumatized and stuff.
PTSD.
Mm. Okay, so a follow-up to that question is, so what do you think that's symbolic of him saying he has nowhere to go? He comes to a realization that he has nowhere to go. And do you ever feel like you yourself have nowhere to go?
No, I don't, because I always feel like I have somewhere to go, either because I have Google Maps on or I have to go home. But I symbolically for him, you know, it's tough coming back from war, because you don't know what peace is really. So
I think him having nowhere to go was just like, really, I think he just needed time to just think. That's why he drove the truck. I mean, he started reminiscing about his ex-girlfriend, Sally, married, and then he started thinking about his old friend, Max.
Mm-hmm.
So him having nowhere to go was just having time for him to think.
Oh, okay.
I feel like, yeah, it's the symbol. It's like what all like veterans always talk about, like even with the podcasts or the TED Talks we listen to, like they have nowhere to go when they get back and they feel lost and they feel like they don't belong there. So, yeah.
All right. Okay, so later in that chapter, Booger reveals that while they were camping out in Vietnam, motors fell onto their campground where they were camping. And around the third motor, he hears a scream, and he hears Kiowa scream, and he looks around and sees Kiowa stuck in the muck. So he goes to try to help Kiowa, but Booger finds out that if the more he tries to help Kiowa, the more he's going to get stuck in the muck. So then he leaves Kiowa there, and then to save himself, and lets go of Kiowa, and Kiowa later dies after that. So the question is that, well, first imagine yourself in Booker's shoes, and the question is that, what would you do in that exact situation that Booker was in, and how would you respond to everything that happened after?
Well, if he knew he was getting like more caught up in that mud, the more he tried to help, like there's literally nothing he could do. I mean, you might as well save yourself. But I mean, I don't know, it's tough. It's tough leaving him, but also, I mean, if you know, you kind of want to be by his side, but then again, you're going to get stuck too, and then you'll both die, and then it'll just be pointless. So
I think Norman did what he thought was right, but at the end, it like he paid the consequences, and you know, one of his friends, Kiowa, ends up dying,
So he's just gonna feel really guilty about it.
Yeah, the guilt will always be there, but I feel like that's the best option that he had. There wasn't much else he could do, especially because he kept singing more and more and more. That like there was nothing at all he could have done other than getting himself out of there. So I feel like it's just a tough situation, and it's just like what has to happen.
I think that's why the chapter is speaking of courage too. You know.
Oh, that's
deeper
being.
Wow.
Yeah. Lack of courage. He just left his friend there to die.
Okay.
The dots
and then I have, there's another question. It was, okay. sorry, there was another question.
what is it?
Towards the end of the chapter, it's saying, I'm sorry. I can't pronounce his name right now. Boker. He goes into the lake. He stops his car, goes into the lake. After like the 11th time driving around the lake, he goes into the lake, submerges himself inside the lake. And then he stands up, folding his arms, and watches the holiday fireworks. And then he thinks to himself that these are pretty good fireworks for, you know, such a small town. So, out of that whole thing, what do you think all of that is really based around and it's just symbolic for? He submerges himself in the water with his clothes on and everything.
What do you see, like? Water symbolizes a lot of stuff.
Yeah. This is after he reminisces about what happened in the war and you know.
I think
it was just
cool.
A cleanse for himself, you know, and then
almost a restart and then like starting it off good kind of thing. So yeah, that's a really good point.
Because like and symbolism, water is cleansing, baptism. So
yeah, just
he goes in, cleanses, and then because usually. Soldiers have PTSD from the fireworks, thinking it's gunshots or whatever.
Oh, okay. Maybe the fireworks.
Yeah. Do you think?
Thought of the gunshot.
Oh, like always, like looking back at the war when he sees the fireworks and what happened.
I want to make a funny point. Are we done?
Oh yeah.
I want to make a funny point.
Oh yeah.
Wait, do you have one more?
Oh no, that's it.
Okay.
Yeah, go.
All of our podcasts up to then, every time we asked if something was symbolic, Michael would just shoot it down super hard, and now he just came up with like three like best symbols.
Really good, Mr. Guinness. Extra credit, please. Thank you, Mr. Guinness. Have a blessed day, blessed weekend. If you're listening to this, you're my favorite English teacher. You're my only English teacher in this grade.
All right, I think that's
and
a
that
good podcast.
Is the things they talked about, starring starring AJ Rodriguez,
Julian Enriquez,
Michael Arvalo.
Stay tuned. Yeah. Oh my.